It's Marketplace Tech for Monday the 16th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. The Securities and Exchange Commission will start relaxing certain investment rules today. This will mean more access for regular Joe and Jane investors to get in on the ground floor for startups, a kind of risk that heretofore has been available to wealthier venture capitalists and special accredited investors. The provision from the Jobs Act, signed in 2012, lets businesses sell $1 million worth of shares per year to regular investors through crowdfunding portals and other services. Could it be a way for new players to spot the next big success and get a toehold on the stock? Maybe. Paul Kudrowski is head of SK Ventures, and he joins us to talk about this. So, Paul, you're an investor. What advice would you give the newbies?
Yeah, my biggest concern with it all is this kind of, I've said it before, that sort of this Groucho Marx phenomenon, right? I mean, I don't want to be a member of any club that would have me as a member. That applies in a dangerous way when you're investing in young companies, in the sense that you probably shouldn't want to invest in any young company that would have you as an investor.
So how do you navigate that as an investor, a potential investor?
I'm not convinced it actually is navigable. If they could have raised money from Sequoia or, I don't know, Kleiner or Benchmark or whoever, well, they would have, and they're not. What I suggest to people that they do is have a really candid conversation with the company about, why am I so appealing? How did I get lucky?
What's the scenario or the company that this might work really well for?
And that's an important point. My initial comment about this sort of thing is, you know, the Groucho Marx problem applies in spades in the venture market. So in companies that are best suited to venture financing, which tend to be young, high growth companies with probably less than a dozen employees, usually in technology, sometimes in life sciences, periodically in hardware. So if you're outside of those categories, those companies are the ones that are the most capital starved. And in a sense, you actually do have a little bit of an edge. No one else is really that interested. And that doesn't mean it's a bad company. It just means that the people who are sort of professionals at funding growth companies aren't that interested.
Are you looking at these new investors at all as competitors?
No. And I'll give you the non-cynical and the cynical answer. Not at all. I think it's great. It's good to have them in the marketplace. It's good to have them funding things that, you know, we necessarily wouldn't necessarily look at. But the more cynical answer is they kind of look at some of these new investors as sort of krill or something. It's great to have them out there funding things that we wouldn't fund, and we'll scoop up the things that work. That's the risk. To get around that problem, what you want to do is make sure that you have a pretty good sense of what the capital requirements are of the company. If it's going to eventually need $20 million, run and hide. If you really think that there's a pretty good chance that on $1 million that they'll be able to get to profitability, then that's interesting. So there's kind of the line of demarcation, if you will.
Paul Kudrowski joins us. He is the head of SK Ventures. Paul, thanks for chatting.
Sure. It's been great.
About 40,000 Verizon workers have been on strike since April 13th. Those striking have jobs like network technician or customer service representative, unionized positions that support telephone, TV, and the company's high-speed internet service, Fios. The problem is that Verizon doesn't see a lot of growth in this part of its business. Marketplace's Annie Baxter looks at what the strike tells us about the changing telecom landscape.
Thanks for calling Verizon. Due to a strike, you may experience a delay before reaching an agent.
The striking Verizon workers are on what's known as the wireline side of the business.
People that deal with landline services, whether that's phone or TV or broadband.
Jan Dawson is a technology analyst at Jackdaw Research. He says headcounts of call center and IT workers have dropped as the wireline business has declined. People have mostly given up on landline phones, and growth in fiber optic services is flat. To cut costs in wireline, Verizon wants to outsource more, which the striking workers don't like. And Verizon wants to invest more in wireless services, according to Christopher Yu, a communications law professor at the University of Pennsylvania.
The profitability and the growth potential on the wireless side is just so much higher.
So what leverage do the striking workers have, given that they're not on the growth side of the business? Yu says they'd have to show it's costlier for them to stay on strike and disrupt customer service than for Verizon to meet their demands. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
Hi, Ben Johnson here. Thanks for listening to Marketplace Tech. We give you context on business and technology in your life. Some context on us. We are a nonprofit service and we rely on donations, call it old school crowdfunding. Your gift in any amount will automatically be doubled this month thanks to the generosity of Newman's Own Foundation. We've also made some awesome Let's Do the Numbers Pilsner glasses as a thank you to donators. You can donate today at marketplace.org. On Wednesday, Google kicks off its developers conference called I.O., and while annual big tech events have on and off years, this year there are rumors about interesting pieces of hardware from one of the world's biggest makers of software. One, codenamed Chirp, is a rumored competitor to Amazon's Echo, that speaker that you can put in your house and bark directions at to play music, read a recipe, or shop from Amazon. The other is a virtual reality headset that might not need a separate phone or computer to work. Whether or not we'll get either or both remains to be seen, but Marketplace senior tech correspondent Molly Wood is here with some deets. Hiya, Molly.
Hey, Ben.
So Chirp, this is a non-threatening name for a thing that could go in your house and listen to your every word. What do we know?
It's just a little birdie. It's not adding to Google's complete file of information about you at all. We don't know much about Chirp, actually. It's still very much in the may appear stage. And it looks like even if it's announced at Google I.O., it probably won't be released too soon.
We also might get a kind of next-gen Google Cardboard device. I know some people are talking about that, virtual reality headset.
Yeah, that's also, you know, pretty firmly in the rumor camp. What's interesting about it is that the rumors say it would be a virtual reality headset that doesn't require a phone to power it the way that the Cardboard and the Samsung Gear devices do. And it wouldn't require a computer the way that Oculus will or the HTC Vive, so that it would be actually a standalone device. Now, I'm a little skeptical about this because it would require some miniaturization of some really powerful technology. But look, if a smartphone can already power a virtual reality headset, it's certainly possible, but I bet it's going to be pretty big.
Is there anything else that you're going to be watching? I know you're going to I.O. this week.
I'm going to I.O. and I'll be interested in what Google has to say about artificial intelligence. They've got this tool now, Parsi McParseface, and they're making a really big deal out of their growing ability to parse language and natural language searching.
We'll see if we get any of it. Marketplace senior tech correspondent Molly Wood. Molly, thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Hey, by the way, you can find Marketplace on the blogging platform Medium. Search Marketplace. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.